Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me if I talk just like this? Oh, that's great. I'm here with you this morning, and my hope is that I will just be able to be more vulnerable than I often am. And I also want to share a word that's real, and a word of encouragement on Valentine's Day. In this month of February, Black History Month, every year I get deeper into the month of February because I want to experience Black culture and grow in my understanding of Black history, and not only that, grow in my own self-awareness. That self-awareness I gain sometimes eludes me soon after I get it. So I'm hoping very much that this morning what I want to share, which in a way I could use the title of that song, Love's Lifting Me. What I really want to share is how love is lifting me. That's what I hope comes through me this morning. So I'm remembering an African-American woman who worked at Joseph's House early on, and my friend Rinaldo and I both know this woman. Her name is Mary Williams. Mary, Tom knows Mary Williams, David. Mary, when I knew her at Joseph's House, was a fierce woman. She had street cred. She was really smart. She hadn't stayed in school long because she'd worked all of her life since she was a child. So Mary could really cook, and she could clean. She could give a thorough treatment that killed all the lice that somebody was suffering from. And when a person had died, it was Mary who would tenderly bathe that person's body and lay the person out. Mary didn't like many people. She did not like me, and I was afraid of Mary. So I have this memory from many years ago. There was a small bedroom at Joseph's House where we had cared for a man who had died there of AIDS. Robert had lived in the room quite a while before he passed away. And the room was empty now, and we were expecting someone to move in the next day. So Mary and I went into the room. We opened the windows, pulled the bed and the chest of drawers away from the wall into the middle of the room to really give that room a scrub, get it sparkling and ready for the person who would come in the next day. So I know, that every one of us here believes that's a good thing, right? To really clean this room, make it beautiful and welcoming for the person who's going to be moving in. Well, Mary is about 15 years older than I am. I think she's still living, and I haven't seen her for some time. And what she did at Joseph's House a lot was clean. And we were shorthanded that day. I was multitasking. And I noticed talking a little bit fast, you know, a little anxious, that those fans on those blades on the fan above needed to be washed, and the walls were so dirty. And even those floorboards had somehow got really sticky, grimy, dirty, and they needed to be clean. And so in that spirit of let's get this done, I asked her to take care of it, and I left to go and do something else. I came back a little while later, and Mary was on her knees scrubbing those baseboards and floors from a bucket, and she was weeping. There was a powerful sorrow in her tears. I didn't understand. This is Mary's job, right? I got on my knees with that bucket of water between us, and I said, Mary, what's the matter? Why are you crying? and through angry tears and clenched teeth, she said, "What choice do I have, little missy? I have to scrub your floors. I have to clean your damn baseboards." It took me too many years to understand that the cost of getting down on your knees and scrubbing the floor was different for Mary than it was for me. And it took me too many years to understand that the painful relationship that Mary Williams and I had, that painful history of relationships between black women and white women, was rooted in history, but it's not history. Our relationships are rooted in pain and injustice, rooted in freedom and rooted in no real freedom to choose. And this is the one that hurts me the most. Rooted in African American women made to feel invisible, consciously or unconsciously, by white women like me. I didn't grow up in the South. I didn't even grow up in this country. But I could feel that what was going on between Mary and me was huge and unhealed, and I felt a sense of shame, and it's never left me. This past December, I was fortunate. I don't know how I did it. I stumbled online onto an African-American professor whose name is George Yancey. Last year, Yancey did a series in the New York Times, a bunch of interviews with mostly African-American public intellectuals and philosophers, and the interviews were about race. And all these interviews express, there's a kind of a thread. It's the experience of people who live as people of color in a white-run world, and that's something that a white person really can't understand. Because we can't know it firsthand. If I had known Mary Williams' experience firsthand, or if I'd wanted to, things would have been different between us. George Yancey's letter, he addresses it to white America, starts like this. He says, "I have a mighty request. As you read this letter, I want you to listen to me with love, a sort of love that demands that you look at parts of yourself, at parts that I look at parts of myself that might cause pain and terror," as James Baldwin said it. I want you to listen with love. And if I had listened with love there, on my knees in front of Mary Williams with that bucket between us, what would have been different? And what might I have done? As it was at that time, I had no inner access to real love or courage or a desire to know why Mary was so angry and upset. In that moment, Mary's pain wasn't my priority. Getting that room ready was my priority. And I was afraid. And I probably thought to myself something about how lucky she was to have this job, well paid by usual standards. And I'd bought into the labeling that Mary had acquired at Joseph's house. Mary is such a drama queen. Who can ever really get a drama queen? And I didn't try. And rather than feeling compassion, I felt helpless. And I was determined to get that room ready, so I listened a little, and I left. Mary and I never talked about it, and I've never forgotten it. We don't talk much about the urgency of love these days, George Yancey writes. He meant the scary kind of love, the kind of love in ordinary, everyday life that risks not being reciprocated the kind that refuses to flee in danger, the kind of love that would have stayed on her knees, would have opened her arms and said, "Mary, I'm so sorry for your pain. I ask you," George Yancey says, "to look deep. Look into your soul with silence. Quiet that voice that will speak to you of your white innocence, or in my case in this story, my white helplessness." So he says, take a deep breath. "If you're white," Yancey says, "I'm asking you not to seek shelter from your own racism. Don't hide from your responsibility. Begin right now being vulnerable." I can feel my heart pound. I want this. I want this. "Use this letter as a mirror," he invites. "A mirror that refuses to show you what you want to see. A mirror that demands that you look at the lies that you tell yourself so you don't feel the weight of responsibility for those who live under the yoke of your whiteness, my whiteness." Mary's such a drama queen. She's lucky to have this job. The thing about that mirror is, sometimes it shows me more when someone I trust stands with me and looks into it with me. Someone I trust can give me courage and persistence to see what I find hard to see. I'm blessed to have such friends. Friends of Jesus, friends, Eighth Day friends. Oh, I'm just looking at each of you and at how many times I've been held accountable and witnessed your lives and struggled and taken courage from us as a faith community and from you as individual men and women. There are friends that help me stand and look in this mirror who are in the wider circles of racism awareness and racial healing and justice that I'm part of, white friends and black friends, and I need them. I need you. Or I won't see the lies that elude me all the time. It's through my friends' voices and my awareness of your lives that I can hear more of what that voice in the mirror wants to tell me. What lies do I tell myself? That I don't tell myself lies. Before I die, I hope to become so much more free. Really, really free, scary free. I want to love with a scary kind of love that can risk not being reciprocated, that refuses to flee in the face of everyday danger, that refuses to flee in the face of ordinary pain. I want that love. That's how I want to love. I'm old enough to be scared and sad and to feel shame and to fool myself sometimes when I look in any mirror, especially this mirror. And I need that mirror. It's my freedom. It's my freedom. It's the word of faith we read in Romans 10 that welcomes God to go deep in us and set things right, to heal us. No one who trusts God, heart and soul, will ever regret it. I'm trusting God not to take that mirror away from me. I'm trusting God to heal me all the way. So, this morning on Valentine's Day, this is how love is lifting me. And this is my Valentine's to you. Amen.